Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about passive-aggressive behavior. And you know, we announced the topics a little in advance, and we got quite a few questions, and I didn't realize this, but passive-aggressive behavior is kind of an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show. So let's first start out by talking about what we mean by such a thing, because really the behavior is universal. It's just the subject of this talk is kind of an American term, an American, I guess a psychiatric term. I don't know. It's kind of gotten into the regular vernacular of ordinary language. So, what is passive-aggressive behavior? And I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for participating and coming and listening. Yes, we're going to have a good time. So, what is it? Rasna and others are saying that it's hostility disguised as an apology. Ooh, yes. It's when somebody is really hostile, right? They feeling kind of aggressive and nasty, but they don't want to show it. They cover it up. And they look like they're being apologetic, right? Yeah, it seems like they're doing, but they're not really. They're not really. It's not really an apology. It's just a cover for hostility. Hostility disguised as an apology. Yes, we're seeing lots of examples. Yes, we see that quite a bit, don't we? Sometimes, where someone does something that was hostile, nasty, aggressive, breached a civility rule, right, was kind of against the group, and then they apologize and say they thought it was a good thing. Passive-aggressive behavior. Instead of saying, well, you know, I felt like it, They give this fake sincere apology. We've seen that. Oh yeah, we have. We get a lot of agreement. Yeah, and they say that they, for example, they say that they thought it was a good idea, or they thought that's what we wanted. Right? Get that one too. Yeah. So, you know, we were going to talk about what to do about these things after we talked about what passive-aggressive behavior is, but we're already getting questions about what to do about that. And it is so let's talk about it right now. There's no sense in, I always say this show is never scripted. It goes wherever we take it. And so let's talk about what to do about that right now, because we see it a lot. Where someone does something and then they make the apology for it. Yeah. And what should we do about that? there's kind of an expression that people are using that they see happen, and it's better to apologize than to ask, right? It's kind of an expression that means that they don't ask first, they just do something, and then when you notice that they've done it, they say, oops, sorry about that. What should we do about it? How should we prevent that? Yes, it's a real good point. A lot of people are making the point that you set one of the rules of the participation, one of the rules of the group from the outset, is to not discuss or take anything outside the group, right? That it's private. The strictness of that, I always think, is in direct correlation to the, I don't like to say secrecy, but to maybe the importance of the issues and what's being discussed and how we want to keep it in-house because we're still working on it, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times we see this nowadays with social media, right? People divulge what's going on. They say what they ate for breakfast. You know, there's people that overshare, and they don't even, this is really, it's passive-aggressive behavior, but sometimes they don't even realize it. It's just that they report every single moment of their lives to everybody in the entire world. This is a good sign that I'll unfriend you on my Facebook page, but they really do, and especially people have a blog. They want to report every single second because, quite frankly, they don't do that much that's interesting. And that's the truth. No one really cares, and they suspect it. So they report every single moment of every single day of every single – get the picture? Yeah. I think one of the rules should be we don't go outside the group. We don't discuss what we're discussing here. It's a discussion. It's a negotiation. We're thinking about it, right? Yeah. If you don't say stuff about us that's bad to the outside world, you won't need the apology, and we won't have the passive-aggressive behavior, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, and within the group, sometimes we see that with participants within the group. They say something. You see that in courtrooms sometimes. They say something that they know is untoward, that they know is aggressive, that they know is rude, and then they take it back. Oh, I'm so sorry, didn't mean to say that. We have civility rules, right? Yeah. We talk about them on this show sometimes. We talk about them all the time, come to think of it. And, yes, we've got some newer people. Thank you for being here. Thank you all for being here. And the civility rules are very simple. They basically say we won't be rude to each other in any way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we enforce that immediately and call people out on their not being civil, right? Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that I, you know, I'm going to say it depends. People are saying, when do you announce these kinds of things? I'm going to say it depends. If you've got a group that's fairly in sync with each other, and the issues are working towards something outside the group, but they're not issues within the group, we're all in agreement, you've got less chance of passive-aggressive behavior and breach of civility and like that. You might not have to spell out the rules. If you have a group that's very diverse, basically might not like each other, yeah, for a variety of reasons. Bigotry being one of them. You might have to make those rules in writing. I mean, I've done it in writing in my day, but right up front, and you might have to remind everybody each time. Yeah. Depends on your group of people is what it really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point that Glenn and others are making. Sometimes passive-aggressive behavior is hostility disguised as compliance. Hostility disguised as compliance. We pretended to do our best. It looks like we did compliance. We insist that we did. But we did it in such a way that it was aggressive, hostile-type behavior, really, kind of. Because we didn't really, we complied on the surface, but we did it in a way that perhaps alienated somebody else, right? Yeah, we've seen that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing. We're going to enforce and really make a rule about best practices, right? Yeah. You know, Allison and others are using a little phrase that I think is not an Americanism, but we'll find out. It's passive-aggressive behavior is oftentimes seen when people are allegedly having righteous indignation. People are going, yeah, we know what that is. Righteous indignation is when you get all puffed up and you say you've been, you know, wronged or insulted or something. But really, you're pushing it. You're taking offense. You're having righteous indignation for no reason. It's just you were particularly touchy, right? Yeah, righteous indignation. Yes. People are saying they have relatives like that. Yes, we all do. Yes, I can name at least three in my family tree. And you know what? We all stay away from them as much as possible, too. They make a family gathering an interesting event. Righteous indignation. They also hold a grudge, right? Forever. It's like it was a teeny-weeny thing. You took it wrong. You had righteous indignation, and you're still chewing on it. Fantabulous. 20 years was not enough time to let it pass. Ha! Cool. Yes, I know people like that. And, you know, and really, you should only hold a grudge on something really big, yeah, in my opinion. But people that have righteous indignation have passive-aggressive behavior just because they like it. It's part of their personality. They take everything as a personal offense, right? And they take everything wrong. If there's a way to take offense for some sort of a comment or something that happened that is really wasn't meant to be offensive, if there's a way to look at it that way, they're in. They just enjoy it. Righteous indignation, yeah. Oh, I'm not going to go there. But several people are saying that as far as family members are concerned or other people, they feel that righteous indignation makes you live a really long time. Mm-hmm. It's good for your health, right? Yeah. It's, yeah, there's a little expression, and we're going to do little expressions today, aren't we? It's very strange. That the more you complain, the longer God lets you live. Yeah. Maybe it just seems that way to the other people. Nope, people are alleging that it's true. Okay. So, righteous indignation is often passive aggressive behavior. It's disruptive, for one thing, and it makes people huffy. It makes them feel put upon. Yeah, righteous indignation is really that's a real good example of passive aggressive behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jason and others are saying that passive aggressive behavior is when you turn obnoxious behavior into someone else's fault. Turn passive aggressive behavior is turning obnoxious behavior into someone else's fault. It's his fault. Yes, because there goes the righteous indignation, huh? Yeah. Benita and others are taking the turning into someone else's fault a step further. Passive-aggressive behavior is blaming others but having the appearance of cooperation. That would be the holding a grudge part, the passive-aggressive behavior. Blaming others, but having the appearance of cooperation. You seem like you're doing it, but you're not. You're not being a team member. You're not playing for the team. You're not helping us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now that we've defined it and we've decided that it's really quite a nasty thing, how do we recognize passive-aggressive behavior and not just, inability, for example? Because sometimes people don't do something or they blame someone else because, well, this is kind of passive-aggressive behavior, isn't it? Because they are, not very competent and they didn't want to admit it. That kind of passive-aggressive behavior really, too. Because you should say, I don't know. I don't understand what I could you define the parameters of my task better. I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. You see, because people who are really trying to help, they will ask questions. They will say, "Will you? Can you explain it to me? Can you lead me in the? Can you show me the right direction to go? You know, can you give me an example?" Because sometimes, which never happens to us, of course, but sometimes someone's given a task, somebody's asked for something, and they really don't know exactly what to do. They don't understand it. They don't understand the specifics. They understand the general idea, why we're doing this, but they don't understand exactly how to do it, right? Yeah. And so it is, they'll ask questions. A passive-aggressive behavior will just be blaming it on somebody else, right? Or get righteous indignation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good point. We're acting like only participants have passive-aggressive behavior, but we have to guard against it in our own behavior. And sometimes we see it in a leader if we're one of the participants. You know, leaders can have passive-aggressive behavior too, right? They can assign tasks and not be clear so that you fail. And then if you try to ask questions, they get righteous indignation. Or they act like you are being incompetent, right? Mm-hmm. Hostility disguised as compliance. Hostility disguised as leadership, maybe, too, right? Mm-hmm. Having the appearance of cooperation, but really blaming other people. Very weak leaders do that. Therefore, it wouldn't be us, right? And really ones that haven't the vaguest notion what they're doing, which is a weak leader, right? Because they haven't gotten it defined. And we've talked about defining the goal and defining the process, right? Prior shows archived recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. And it's because we haven't really, we don't know where we're going, and because the leader doesn't know where we're going. And that means that we need to step back and redefine what it is we're doing, redefine the specifics. Yeah. Because if you don't know the specifics, if you don't know what the goal is, what success looks like, you cannot lead towards it because there's no way of finding it, right? Yeah. And that's the key. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so how do we recognize passive-aggressive behavior? Manuel says that if the participant feels inferior to others, I'm going to say that could be the leader, too. The person who is exhibiting passive-aggressive behavior feels inferior to the others. The leader might feel inferior because the participants might have more expertise, for example. Yeah. I sometimes work with governments and military and like that. And it's funny. You get into a group and there is no rank there, right? Because everybody's equal. But there is invisible rank. Because, well, when you get into the outside world, somewhere along the line, somebody outranks you. Or is your superior in some way. Or is the boss, for example, doesn't have to be the military, is the boss. Or is somebody important in the community who you feel inferior to, right? Happens to leaders sometimes, you see, the leaders of the group. And that creates passive-aggressive behavior because you're supposed to be equals, right? Or somebody's supposed to be the leader, so you're supposed to know what you're doing. But kind of inferior. You have kind of like inferiority complex, kind of feel inferior. And so you act out your inferiority feelings with passive-aggressive behavior to cover it up, right? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's a good point. Quite a few people are saying that, for kind of just to sum it up, And thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. That oftentimes manifests itself, the kind of feeling of inferiority, in being overly unctuous, in being overly overly polite, kind of. Yeah. I mean, unctuous is a better word, really. This is true. Yeah. And sometimes that's what's manifesting. Somebody feels that they're inferior, so they're trying to bring the other person to their level and showing that they're very deferential. Mm-hmm. But they're not really helping. They're not really producing. They are not really in compliance with what needs to be done. They're just making a big show of it. Yeah. Unctuous is a sign of disrespect, huh? Can be. Mm-hmm. That's when we enforce the civility rules. And we might even take the person kind of aside and say that it's not necessary to do all that bowing and scraping type stuff. Because it's really distracting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeremy and others are going for lack of enthusiasm. This is a sign of passive-aggressive behavior. Let's see. We have all kinds of people talking about lack of enthusiasm as a sign of passive-aggressive behavior. And another is talking about minimal participation. Don't want to be here. Don't care about you people. Taking too much of my time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have passive-aggressive behavior. I'm going to look like I'm here because I am physically here. I got forced. But I'm going to participate as minimally as possible and stay in the group because I want to stay in the group. For one reason or another, maybe work-related, maybe some sort of a treat that's involved. Good point, resume enhancer. Yeah. Want to stay in the group, don't want to do anything for it. Minimal participation. Mm-hmm. People are calling that dragging your feet. That really is an Americanism, and of course this is a global show, but that's what it means. It means that just whatever it is that needs to be done, you're just the slowest one, and you do it as minimally as possible. Just, you know, sometimes that's a sign of bad leadership, too. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful that somehow you are not causing it, the minimal participation, the dragging of feet. Have you ever been in a group, and I think we all have, well, yes, thank you, where it's the leader, whatever you do isn't right. You know, you get a task, you're asked to make some phone calls, you're asked to do something, and you do it real competently and real fast and like that. And whatever it is you do, they don't like it. It's not what they had in mind. It's not good enough, right? And this is annoying. And this will cause you to not be real enthusiastic and to do the very bare bones minimum because you get less criticism that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've all been in groups like that, right? Where you go, well, whatever I do is going to be wrong. And if I do nothing and just show up to the meetings and look fairly pleasant, I won't get criticized. So, and if I do something, then everybody go, well, that wasn't the right thing to do. And you're like, well, let's think about this. I could take my time and my effort or get and not have it be right and have a whole big discussion. Or I could just sit there and say, well, I did this, but they didn't answer the phone. And that's fine. That's good. You're a good group member. Yeah. You see that in groups where the leader has trouble delegating duty, right?
Yeah.
What they need to do it themselves, really, because nothing anybody else does is good enough, because it's not what they would have done, maybe. You see, that's a sign of someone who can't delegate responsibility. And they really, sometimes they really don't want to. They really want to do it all themselves. And if you're in a group like that, hey, I hope there's dinner involved. Because it's certainly easier. And you can watch it unfold. And we will not be that because we know how to delegate duties, right? Yeah. So that's what happens. That's why people do minimal participation sometimes. Sometimes it's not really passive-aggressive behavior. It's just passive behavior. You want to do it yourself? Go with God. Go do it. Yep, I'm just going to nod my head. passive-aggressive behavior, we see it when there's always an excuse for inaction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point, Stephen and others are making. The person always has an excuse for inaction. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about sabotage. Mm-hmm. And that is the ultimate passive-aggressive behavior, right? That goes with the apology. They do something, a participant does something against what we're trying to accomplish. For example, they tell a competitor, they tell, well, I hate to call it the other side, but sometimes there is another side, right? They tell somebody so they can work against us. They kind of sabotage us. They turn traitor, right? The ultimate passive-aggressive behavior, they look like they are participating. All right, kind of minimally. But they're in on all the conversations. And they know, for example, who we're connecting with, who it is that might be helping us. People are asking for examples. How about a donor? Somebody's going to give money. Somebody who's kind of on the fence, who's kind of thinking about it but hasn't done it yet. How about a politician, right? Politicians will do anything that looks good for them and not do anything that seems like it might cause a problem for them, might cause some sort of a disruption, might be something that people don't want to do, right? Yeah. Or might be against public opinion, you see? And we're talking to them, and we've gotten kind of on our side, but they haven't come out yet. And then one of the group participants tells the other side, who gets to them, and then they get scared and then they go away. Yeah. Ooh, that's more than, well, I suppose it's passive-aggressive behavior because they look like they're on your side. But then they're really not. That may be more towards sabotage and traitor than anything else. How do you prevent it, people are asking. We're getting quite a few people saying that the way to prevent it is to be certain of the membership of your group, of your participants. That is a great idea, but it means that somewhere along the line you get to choose. And that's not always the case. If you can hand pick your people, wow, that's a really good idea. You should never pass that one up. If you can make a decision as to who is going to be in the group, excellent. If you can kind of vet the people, yeah, you need to watch. Whenever I'm doing a group and it needs to be, I don't say confidential, Because I always find that telling people it's secret is a real good way to get them to tell somebody, because everybody loves a good secret. But it's kind of, well, proprietary. When I have a group that we're discussing something that really is confidential and we're discussing how to do something and how to change something and like that, I do keep track. In fact, I have an assistant that does this. We keep track of the social media for the people in the group, the blogs and like that, to catch any kind of indiscretion before it becomes an indiscretion, right? Kind of get the sense of it. A lot of people are saying to make rings of confidentiality. I've done that. I'm going to say it depends. It will keep sabotage at bay. And if you've got something that truly can be sabotaged, for example, it's a good point, and we see this even in the United States and like that, it might be a work-related thing. The identity of the people in the group might be something that people don't want told, right? You don't want it to be known who's in the group because it might impact them. We're trying to do something that might impact, for example, an employer, something that they don't approve of, or the government doesn't approve of it. Yeah? Yeah. Some sort of religious freedom. Yeah. And so, yes, thank you. We have quite a few people who are from countries that personal freedom is not as well defined. And you might not want to be, if you're a fairly important person within the society or a government person perhaps, you might not want it to be known that you are part of a group that is working for a change, for example. Mm-hmm. It would impact you. You don't want anyone to know. If you've got a group like that, rings of confidentiality are not unreasonable because it's important. Because you need, in order, you're forming, you're getting, you need in order to have revolution, so to speak, you need to know that you could trust the other people with your thoughts, with your ideas, and with your actions. Yeah. And rings of confidentiality is an idea where you have a bigger group that does the basic thing, that does the outreach, the, well, sometimes it's like a protest or something. And that's a group of people that you're not real sure about, but they seem to be not passive-aggressive. They seem to be working. And they seem to be enthusiastic, and it's good to have numbers, right? We've discussed that there's strength in numbers. So it's, especially if you're trying to deal on a political level, it's good to have a lot of people that say that they agree, right? Now, you might have to have some connections and some ideas and some experts who not everybody in the whole group needs to know about, right? Because they might tell, or they might think it's not a good thing and get kind of, well, social media'd about it and like that. And that would be another, that would be a group within the group, a ring of confidentiality. And then you might have an even tighter ring of actual leadership of the group, right? Yeah. And so that those would be what I would call rings of confidentiality. You guys are all calling them different things. But it's the same idea, yeah. The same idea to compartmentalize the people so that not everybody in the big kind of freewheeling group knows exactly who is in the inner core to work it out. Yeah. This is good if you're trying to get some sort of government change, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate in the fact that I'm an American, so I don't see this too much. You see it in workplace. For example, if there's some sort of an experimental proprietary thing that we're working out, that we're trying to get legalized, and we don't want the competition to know about it, right? Sometimes a lot of groups, a lot of businesses are working on the same general idea, and you don't want them to know the specifics of yours because you want to be first. Mm-hmm. And you want to hit the market first. It's a marketing thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought of some groups that were doing kind of drone. You know what a drone is? The little things that fly around with cameras and soon-to-be packages and stuff. And there is, well, there's a problem with the entire field. It's not talking out of turn. That the laws need to be changed about airspace. Because it's stuff flying around overhead, right? And it has the potential for privacy actions and a whole bunch of stuff. There's a whole bunch of levels, a whole bunch of layers, and a whole bunch of right-of-way in the air that we never had before, because otherwise, because planes are big things, and they were the only things that flew and delivered stuff. So that might be zones of confidentiality, because you need politicians to come on board. and people within government who make the rules, essentially speaking. You saw that with, in fact, I have talked about this before. In the United States, there's a push towards legalizing marijuana. Marijuana is definitely federally illegal, right? And so if you want to, you might not want everybody in a group to know that you're a grower of marijuana, a supplier, for example, a possessor of marijuana, for example, right? Because it's, in some, a lot of states still, it's illegal, illegal under federal law. So you might not want to let that be known. Hmm? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would be to make circles of confidentiality for the people who are working towards changing the law might be a way to prevent passive-aggressive behavior in the form of sabotage. Hmm? You look good, but you're told. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, what other way, how else do we recognize passive-aggressive behavior? Otherwise, we're going to run out of time like we sometimes do. Mead and others are pointing out that one of the ways to notice passive-aggressive behavior is when people have very literal interpretation of the rules. Other people are saying very literal interpretation of the tasks, of the assignments. Very literal. Just exactly what you said, even if they understand what you meant, what the context was. They take it out of context and they do something very literal, and they pretend that's what they thought you wanted, right? That's what you said. Well, you took it out of context. That's not what we meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to be careful in your instructions. Good point. But when people are taking it out of context, that's passive-aggressive behavior. It really is. Mm-hmm. This is a real good point. It's a real good sign of passive-aggressive behavior. Deidre and others are saying, when a participant is overly helpful and interfering with other participants' assignments, overly helpful and interfering with other participants' assignments. Yes. Let me help you. I can do that. And they got their own assignment, right? That's not their team, but they butt into everybody else's and confuse the issue. Passive aggressive. It seems like they're going to do something. And they've interfered. And they weren't even supposed to be doing that. And now it's not getting done. They're overly, instead of minimally compliant, they are overly enthusiastic. But not really. They're just mucking things up. Passive-aggressive behavior. You have your own assignment. Everybody has a task. Even if you could do 7 of them, it's not fair, right? Let's all stay on our own task. Pardon me. I'll take a sip of water. Excuse me. I kind of have a frog in my throat. Excuse me. Thank you. This is a good one, too, way to recognize passive-aggressive behavior. Hussein says that the participant starts an argument and then backs down because it was ridiculous. They start an argument and then they back down. They start a fight. And Hussein says it's the purpose of it is to be time-consuming and disruptive. Yes. Participant starts an argument. They push someone's buttons. People know how to do that. Starts an argument, and then they back down. Oops, didn't mean it that way. But it makes the atmosphere, the group dynamic, less, right? It's disruptive, and it's time-consuming. You got to stop them before they open their mouths. You know it when it's coming. You can see it, right? Right. No, we're not going to go there. Let's stay on task. It's not your turn to speak. Yeah, we need to let everybody have a turn to speak. Yeah. Starts an argument and then backs down. It's time-consuming and disruptive. Good example of passive-aggressive behavior. Let's stay on task. That's not part of our process, right? May and others are pointing out that a good way to find passive-aggressive behavior is when somebody is having a side discussion all the time. Creates a click, right? A side discussion. They're commenting, or they're really having a discussion that's not with everybody. We're trying to hold a meeting. And they're talking to the side there. They're creating a clique, a circle of devotees, so to speak, who are disassociating themselves from the group as a whole. I always want to know what the side discussion is about, so I ask. Right away. Don't let it get going. I ask if they have something to contribute. Yeah, maybe they do. Sometimes the side discussion is just a distraction, right? Passive-aggressive behavior. They're discussing not the issues of the group. They're discussing fingernail polish or something. Creating a click. No. I have in my day, and I know that this is school teacher, but I've done seating assignments. I have, which will keep the clique from sitting next to each other. Yeah, we do all kinds of tricks like that. It depends how big the group is, of course. But you can do random seating assignments, as in when everybody comes in, they pick a number and the seats are numbered. Or, you know, you kind of shake it like a raffle ticket box. Or you can do it. And like that, I mean, there's a way to keep people from sitting with their clique, right? Right. Another sign of passive-aggressive behavior that Tyrek and others are pointing out is when the participant creates contacts selected participants without informing the group as a whole. Freezes some people out of the loop. The passive-aggressive person is contacting selected participants, that's the clique, without informing the group as a whole. They're having a side discussion. They're having a side discussion not in the room, a side discussion by email or phone or something, which freezes some participants out of the loop. They don't know what's going on, right? Yeah. And this is annoying to people that don't know what's going on. And it is passive-aggressive behavior. Somebody's trying to hijack the group, right? They're trying to sway people that they think are more likely to decide with them. They're taking a side. A side on the issues in a group where we're supposed to all be working towards the same goal, right? Yeah. We're not supposed to be hostile to each other. We're all on the same side. That's why we're participating in the group. Mm-hmm. And we make this very clear that we're on the same side. Mm-hmm. So what should we do about this? What should we do about all of it? To prevent the problem, to prevent the people from having passive-aggressive behavior, to prevent it from taking hold is what we're really trying to do more than anything else. We want it to be, well, we want it to go away. That's what we want it to do, right? Yeah. So what should we do to prevent and solve the problem? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying enforce the civility rules. Yeah, good point. Not be rude to each other. You know, this is a very, quite a few people, and this is a very good point, and quite frankly, I would, Paul and others, and I wouldn't have thought about it in this way, but of course, this show is completely unscripted. It goes where we take it. And you can tell about the civility rules. You can announce them each time, right? But it's a good point that those with passive-aggressive behavior will contend that they're not uncivil, that they haven't violated those, because passive-aggressive behavior is insidious. Mm-hmm. Some people are saying it's also unconscious. You don't realize you're doing it. I suppose that people don't realize they're doing it in the sense that they don't think they're passive, that they don't think they have the title, unless it's really, really a deliberate act. Sometimes some people have gotten in the habit of acting like that in their lives. Does that make sense? It's kind of a personality trait. And if it is, then you have to curtail it for this group at this time. Right? Yeah. Passive-aggressive behavior. As kind of a personality trait. You know, it's a very good point. I can accept that. Sometimes you have to bring it up to people. Because the true passive aggressive knows it though, and they're gonna insist that they're not violating the civility rules. It's a real good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what else should we do? Ula and others are saying that we can reassign tasks within a reasonable time or have a penalty for non-completion. They're doing a minimal job. They're not doing it at all. Or they're doing it real literally. They're really kind of blocking things. Well, what's the penalty for non-compliance? How about being thrown out of the group? That's a good penalty. How about having your task reassigned if you haven't done it in a reasonable time? That's kind of group embarrassment, right? You're really not getting this done. Will somebody volunteer to take it over? Will someone volunteer to help you so you get a peer to watch them and make them do it, right? Yeah. How about peer pressure altogether? You have to bring your product to the group to show what was done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we talked about only contacting selected participants and rings of confidentiality and like that. Joyce and others are saying to use a communication forum as an exclusive means of information. One of those, they're free, those computer websites where you communicate through it, like GoToMeeting type stuff, and therefore everybody can see everything. And that's the only method of communication by the group, so everybody stays in the loop. Everybody stays informed. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what's going on, and nobody is communicating on the outside and excluding other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A communication forum. Good point. Mm-hmm. I like doing that. You have to have a group that's all, well, I suppose it's not real computer savvy nowadays, but sometimes you have people that are less computer skilled in the group, and you have to make sure that they know how. And you know this because they're just not communicating within. They're not, they don't seem to be getting the information and like that. That's the time when you inquire as to kind of why. You know, why is it that we're not having the same information? Yeah. Why is it that we're not quite there? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So reassign. Yeah. So use a communication forum. Mm-hmm. Alba and others are very, very fond of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. Alba says that you can openly discuss everyone's role in success. Openly discuss the being the main sentence there. Openly discuss everyone's role in the success of our mission, in the success of our goal, the success of getting where we're supposed to be getting. Mm-hmm. Let's discuss it. Let's think on it. Let's see what we need to do as a group. Mm-hmm. Martin and others are something, or advocating something that I usually do when I am the leader of a group, and we especially if we have a time limitation. Speaking of which, yes, I think we're not going to get to the recipes this time, and I apologize. We had a really good discussion. Yeah, I can see we've got like 5 minutes left, so we'll do the recipes next time. You know, I know a lot of you like the recipes, and they are fun and they're delicious, but it's so important to have these discussions that I kind of let them go a little bit longer, if possible, and then we kind of carry over the recipes. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. If you want to look up prior recipes, a lot of the shows have them at the end. I suppose, well, there's no way of designating which ones do and which ones don't. But prior shows are archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Yeah, yeah, we tend to go over a little, and I apologize for that. I'll try to get to them for sure next week. Because I could see we've got 5 minutes. I was like, we're still talking. if you've got a... No, what was it we were talking about before? I apologize for the recipes. Truly, I should make notes. Keeping track, yeah. Martin and others are saying that you need to keep track of the progress of the group. As the leader, I think it is important to keep track. You could designate someone to keep track. Now, if it's a big enough group and there's really a lot to keep track of, we call someone in to really send everything out and be very efficient. If it's an organization, sometimes they have a secretary or a administrative person, right? Somebody needs to keep track. Somebody needs to keep track of the communications. Somebody needs to keep track of any kind of research that is sent in by anyone, anything everybody needs to read. Somebody needs to keep track of scheduling. A lot of times we use one of those little scheduling apps, one of those little scheduling, it's called software. You know, they're little freebies that are on the web that, like Doodle, where you everybody you give several choices of meeting, and then people vote when they can come, right, so that you can get it together. And like that, somebody has to keep track of all that. Now, maybe it's the leader. Maybe it's you. But it's very time-consuming, and if you're not being paid, you're not a third-party impartial, you're not being paid, somebody needs to volunteer to do that. Somebody with some time, oftentimes a retired person, or maybe a student intern. We've talked about that before, too. Wonderful thing, because it gives them experience. It gives them something to put on their resume that they worked within a field of their interest. Mm-hmm. And they're usually very computer good. They're good with computers because they grew up using computers. And they can keep track of everything. You need someone to keep track of everything. Hopefully, someone that keeps track is not someone you need to keep track of, right? They need to be fairly efficient and fairly dedicated. It's not hard, but it is time-consuming. You have to be diligent and really look at it regularly, maybe even on a daily basis. But you have to really be disciplined enough to regularly see if this is what needs to be done. Right? Right. Yeah. And so is important in that respect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need someone to keep track. That is a way to prevent passive-aggressive behavior. Because we know if you're not doing it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you've got passive-aggressive behavior and you want to prevent it, Quinn and others are advocating a private discussion concerning behavior. She says sometimes it's an unconscious personality trait. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these things have gotten ingrained as personality traits. I swear to you, I think that's true. I see it. I think it's true. You see that in your family members, for example. They are always taking offense, taking the other side, being unhappy, right? There's people in this world that kind of enjoy being unhappy, and they like spreading it. They think it's contagious and it's a really a good thing. Mm-hmm. So private discussion concerning behavior. Mm-hmm. That might be done during our timeouts. Mm-hmm. Where we're having a little bit of food and a little bit of convivial, and we can talk privately together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we would have talked about the recipes, but we're going to really run out of time. Nori says to acknowledge the behavior and then move on. Yeah. We understand that's how you feel. Let's get back on point. And then as our last point, and then we're going to run out of time. Sorry. Fried and others are saying this is a real good idea. In order to solve the passive-aggressive behavior, bring the behavior to the attention of a superior, right? Especially in a workplace thing. The superior might be a group that sent the participant or a workplace superior, right? Someone who can say, stop that. On a higher level than you are, because they might be having fun, right? But then you work up the ladder and say, you know, this is not going to work out. Can you send someone else? Right? Uh-huh. And then the superior will help quell the behavior. Mm-hmm. So, we, my friends, have run out of time. Yes. You know, a lot of people are advocating, I'm just going to say this, we may go over a smidge, that a lot of people are saying kind of out the person on social media. Ooh, that's a dangerous game. I don't know about that one. Because then they retaliate on social media. I like to keep things in-house, within the group, yeah. I'm not good, I don't think much of a mudslinging contest. Especially on social media where everybody can watch it and kind of encourage it. You know, they make the comments and stuff. Ooh, I don't know about that one. I would be careful. I never say no, but be careful about that one. Oh, we are out of time, my friends. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.